Okay, well, thanks very much for talking to me. One of the reasons, well, there are a couple of reasons why I wanted to talk to you, and one was that my mum said that you've an interesting raconteur. But the other one was that your name's interesting, and you obviously come from Italian
Yeah, I
background. Can you
do.
tell me a bit about that?
My father was born in Johnston, Renfrewshire, and my mother, she's Italian. My four grandparents are all Italian,
All right.
and they all come from the same village in Italy. The name is a sort of localized name in Italy. You'll find that each sort of village in Italy has got a name that is sort of more pronounced in that area than other places.
Okay.
A couple of years ago, we went over to the visit my granny when she was down the south, and I finished up running out the cemetery crying because I could see Giorgio, could see Maurizio, could see Amerigo. The names of my family and my grand, you know, my parents, and that, you know, but that's just the way it is in the south of Italy, you know.
And it's the south of Italy.
But it's down, well, they come from a village called San Biagio Saracinesco, which is approximately 20 miles east of Monte Cassino.
Okay, right. That's where the big battle was, of
Yeah,
course,
that's
and all
right.
that.
Yeah, so you drive by Monte Cassino up the Superstrada and turn off at a place called Pass, I forget what it's called now. I think I'm starting to suffer from memory blanks. Turn off there and just follow the mountains up, and you get into this village at the top of a mountain. And that's where the parents originally came from. And my grandfather and grandmother, my father's side, they moved over to Johnston in the early 1900s, 1902 or 1903.
But did you find there was a kind of still a strong link with Italy?
From what point of view?
From a family
Oh,
point of view. So you were going backwards and
I'll go
forwards.
back and forwards all the time. My first ever recollection of travel was we stayed in New Mainz. Originally, I was born and brought up in New Mainz near Russia. And came down to Motherwell Station and jumped in the train, and it took you 2 full days and one night, or else 2 nights and one day, to get to Rome Station.
Oh God,
Came
right. So
back
you went all the
to
way by train.
well, maybe train down to London and then across the Channel and the other side, and then you changed in Paris. And I think it was about 8 or 9, and I woke up this morning and this guy standing outside on the platform, a machine gun. First time in my life I'd ever seen a machine
Machine
gun.
gun.
This was in Paris or Bologna, sorry. Sorry, it was
Bologna.
Bologna. That was the first time in my life I'd ever seen a real live gun. And I'm sitting there with the sort of literally the tongue hanging out and the eyes popping out. This guy stood with this machine gun. It was incredible.
So
But
how
that's
old
how
were
we
you
used to
then?
go, you know.
How old were you then?
I was about 7 or 8 at the time.
So did you go there for holidays and you
Oh,
spent
yeah,
what?
maybe 3 weeks, 4 weeks in the year.
And you were mixing at that time with what, Italian kids, members of the
Well, there was
family?
very few Italian kids at that time because they would be at school, you know, and when I would go over. And then whether through what's the word I'm looking for here, through coincidence, my wife is Italian, and so obviously we go over there like 2 or 3 times, you know, a year. Apart from last year, that was only went once last year, first time for a long time.
And you always go
So
back to the same spot?
to my wife's place in the south, or I've got a sister and relations that stay up in Milan and my mother's side, so we would either go up to Milan for a wee while one time, and the next time, you know, we're sort of main holiday, we would go down south, as I call it, because you're only what, 5, 10 minutes away from the seaside,
It's a beautiful area.
you know, and you just go down there.
When you were growing up, did you have any kind of family traditions that you thought of as being particularly Italian or whatever?
Well, I don't know. I'm not being biased here. I'm not being ignorant, but because you were Italians at that time, you were not socially one of the boys, shall we say?
Really?
Yeah.
Is this what in New Mainz?
Aye. I'm not going to use the word, but, and I'm saying this jokingly, but I'm saying it seriously. And I was in talking to my mate Joe. We were out last night for a couple of hours, and this guy came in. He's Irish. So he was talking about his, sorry, his, I said, well, I says, when I was growing up, I always thought my name was Tally B, because that's all you ever heard, you know. And you see all this thing in television at the moment about this, that, and all the other different ethnic minorities. Well, I'm sorry, the abuse in my family, you know, not just my family, the Italians got, way back in the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, even into the 60s, it wasn't very nice.
No,
you know, I made some friends at school, but not many, but because I was always the wee tally, I was always this, I was always that. And you just grew up and you accepted that.
Were there many Italians in your men's, or were you there?
No, there were only two other families, Italians, and both of us had, well, both the parents had businesses, you know. But it was, looking back, I enjoyed it, but it wasn't very nice.
No, I can understand that.
But that's just the way it's been all its days.
Yeah. But your family's been here from about 1900?
Well, my grandparents came over. Well, my father's side came over in the early 1900s.
Yeah.
You know, my mother's parents on her side, they never ever, they always stayed on in Italy. My grandfather on my mother's side, he died in 1954. So he died very early.
Right.
And my gran on my mother's side, she just died this year in September, and she's 101.
Good grief.
101 years, 1 month, and 1 day. It was incredible. It was just 101. That was the day she died, you know, September.
That's amazing.
You know.
So when did you come through to Ayr?
1984.
And what brought you here?
I bought a business down the road. It used to be a hotel. So I've been in business since 1973. My father sold his business and retired.
What did he do?
At the end of the day, he had a hotel.
All right.
You know, so when he sold up and retired, I bought a business in Kirklick with my wife.
Okay.
It was a news agent's.
All right.
And just we were there for quite a number of years and wanted to extend the business, and the council wouldn't allow us to extend it, so we sold it and I moved back to New Mains. I bought a pub in New Mains.
Okay, so went from kind of newsagent to pub to hotel.
Alright.
You know. I mean, do you find that a difficult transition?
No. It wasn't a problem in the slightest. Because when I was growing up, my father had a chip shop.
Alright.
So ever since you were, was it knee high or something, they say, that I was behind a counter. You know, you were dealing with the general public, you were working away, and then it went for a chip shop to a general store, to a licensed grocer's, to a pub, to a licensed restaurant, and then to a hotel.
Okay.
So I came through all those stages working away and doing things. And then when I decided and sold up, I bought a business in Kirklick, and I was a newsagent. So from there on, it's just been a progress, continuation.
But it must have been a hard life. The hospitality seems to me always incredibly...
Well, people.
You're never off duty.
No, that's it. People say to me, you know, you're a young man. Maybe in age wise, I'm a young man, but business wise or work wise, I feel as if I've worked a long, long time because we worked 7 days. You know, even when our kids were bringing them up, we were 7 days a week. You know, so it was only in 1991 when I finished up in my own businesses, and I moved and started working with that was my first time in my life I ever worked 5 days a week, and I was absolutely lost on a Saturday and a Sunday. What a day. It's a Saturday, I'm not opening the pub, I'm not doing this, I'm not doing that, you know, and it was so strange for months and months and months and months not working a Saturday and a Sunday, and it's just been a sort of levelling off of there.
Did you find that a difficult thing, not working for yourself but working for somebody else, or did you find that was easier because you had more free time?
It was difficult to the point of view that if you didn't do any, I'm not saying work's the wrong word, if you didn't conduct any business, you were still getting paid, which was strange, because if you didn't work and didn't produce nothing, you'd never get any money, so you couldn't pay your bills. But to turn around and find out that, hey, I just need to go and talk to people and walk out, I don't need to sell nothing, and I'm still getting paid. You know, that was absolutely brilliant, you know. But then, everything's got its good points and bad points, depending on what way you want to look at it. If you're self-employed, and I'm saying it legitimately, you tell the tax man what he's getting. But if you're employed, the tax man tells you what you're getting. So if you're quite happy with that, that's fine. Because you can have a car, you can have this, you can that, and you can claim it back in tax. There's tax breaks available. So if you're prepared to use that, then you can have a good life, as long as you're turning the money over to justify it. But for the other side of the coin, you're paying all that tax out, you're paying this, you're paying that, you're dealing with staff, you've got problems, you've got this, you've got the general public. There's no such a thing as an easy life. You know, you've just got to work at it and accept whatever it throws up at you and be prepared to adapt at the time.
Where did you meet your wife? Your wife's Italian.
Right. My wife came over here the day England got the World Cup.
66.
July 66. Scotland got my wife. my wife came over from Italy as an au pair. And at that time, it was difficult to come over from any country into Scotland, so the au pair was the the easy option or the easy thing to put down a bit of paper to say you're coming over. So anyway, she came over to a family in View Park, in Ruddingston. And she was working in a chip shop. The first time I ever seen her, and it was nothing at all to do with boyfriend, girlfriend, I was playing football with St Bridget's Boys Guild in New Mains, and we were playing St Columba's View Park in View Park, and we beat them. But all during the game, there was boys behind the goals, I'm going to get you after the game, yous are going to get it, etc, etc. So after the game was finished, obviously the priest walked you back to the dressing room, and that was fine, but after that was you were on your own, I would say. So we kept looking out and looking out, and we seen this bus coming, so we had a run to the bus stop, and here, by the time we got up to the bus stop and the bus came down, it wasn't the bus we wanted, you know. So two or three of us just run across the road into the chip shop to buy sweeties or something just to try and, you know, think these guys were all going to hit us, you know. So here, this girl serving the shop, she couldn't speak any English. So a few months later, at this time, get back to that time in 66 and that, what happened was that this Italian family would go to that Italian family this week, and next week you go to them. It was always their business, whether it was a chip shop or a pub or whatever it was, you always went there. So this crowd, they were called they came up and they brought these two girls with them, and here it was my to-be wife and her sister, you know. And I says, I've seen you. And in Italian, she says to my mother and father, he was in the shop a couple of weeks ago, you know. So that was that. And that just for there. And so we spoke, and I spoke a bit, shall we say, and we sort of forgot about it. And it was months later we just decided to go.
How did you go with the language barrier? Because, I mean, did you speak Italian at the time?
Very, very basic, you know, and she was learning English as well, so you just done that a wee bit as well.
And she learnt English faster than you learnt Italian.
Exactly, yeah. Well, she's in the chip shop 7 days a week, so if you don't speak, you don't go in. And they had a nice cream van as well. She would get a nice cream van as well, you know, to pick it up. And there was a woman there, Tony, and she finished up marrying one of the brothers, Albert, God rest him. And she told my wife, we're not going out the van to learn two new words today. So that was the thing as well. She would learn a couple of words on a daily basis. So, you know, so this was, it was the way you learn it, isn't it? You go to speak it. So, and it just sort of snowballed for you there.
So did she do the interpreting for you when you go back to Italy?
Yeah. If it's complicated, if it's simple stuff, then it's not a problem.
Do you find you can read it, or is it?
I can read it, and I'll pick out words, and then I'll just say to my wife, does that say whatever? And she'll say aye, or she'll say no, that word there is, because it's in that sentence, means this, so it's slightly different. But, you know, that's just what it is.
You're never tempted to kind of end up in Italy? Because I was.
I think I'd give it a bash, but my wife's not.
No?
She's not keen to go back. The same with my mother. She does not want, she wouldn't go back to Italy to stay full time.
Why not?
I don't know if it's maybe memories of when they were younger, and they don't think that it would, it's changed. They would still probably assume it's still the same. But if you look at it, my mother's been over here since 1948, you know, so even 10 years ago, the amount of years she's over here, she left Italy when she was, 26, she'd be about 21 or 22 when she got married. So she spent the bulk of her life over here. So my wife was 16, so she spent the bulk of her life here as well. You know, 17 she was. So she spent the bulk of her life here. So to go back there, my ideal scenario would be you go back to Italy maybe for 3-4 months in the year mm-hmm. and come back here. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she's no like to do that, so that's just the way it is.
Because I'm thinking ahead, because my wife's Brazilian, we're thinking, well, are we going to spend some time in Brazil, some time here? And it's a kind of difficult thing to try to figure out. I think we'll at least spend part of the year when we retire, us being over there. And mm-hmm. part of the year.
Well, that's what I would have expected. Well, I would have assumed that we could have done. Mm-hmm. But she's not that keen to go back.
Because there are bits of the south Italy are just gorgeous.
Well, this is it. But my wife says that you go back there, what can you do? Mm. You know, mm-hmm. you know, there's only so much you can do. You've got to pay for the doctors.
That's true.
You've got to have transport because the bus service is nothing like here. Right. You know, all the wee bits and pieces that are the problem. You go over there, you don't know anybody apart from your own immediate family.
Right.
So you need to start making new friends, if that's the word to use. You need to start... going about and networking, is that the terminology you've got to use? Yeah. Whereas here, she can jump in her car and go here, go there, go and meet this and go and meet that and do this, do that. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, the ideal scenario would be a couple of months every year just disappear, you know, or even, you know, two or three times a year, especially in days with the cheap travel.
Right.
You know, just jump in the plane, 2 minutes and you're at the airport and you're away, you know, 6 hours. From house to house.
Good grief, is that all?
You know, that's it is. And my sister's up my line, and it's 5 hours, house to house. Uh-huh. You know, so.
And it's tempting.
That's the thing, but she doesn't like to do it, so obviously I don't pressurise her.
No. So you're retired now?
In brackets.
Yeah, but you're very
technically.
Busy.
Yeah, at the moment I'm unemployed, I'm looking for another job.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. Yeah. I just filled an application form out there for a sessional worker for a children's home.
Oh, right.
You know, I'm on the children's panel in South Ayrshire. I do the children's panel.
Oh, right. Okay.
You know, and since I've done that, I've really enjoyed. Mm-hmm. Enjoyed's not the right word, but it's been interesting. And I'd like to do a bit more for children at that side. Mm-hmm. You know, so the children's home is somewhere that you can have a wee bit of input.
Yeah.
My problem is that I left school at 15. Mm-hmm. I think I've got a great lot of knowledge.
Yeah.
I do not have a piece of paper telling me that I've got an O level, I've got a higher, I've got a degree, I've got this or that. Mm-hmm. So all the jobs nowadays is your qualifications, and if you don't have any, you've had it. Yeah. So it's just the way the cookie crumbles.
It's a difficult one, Ben. How did you get involved with you've been working with group?
Yeah.
Yeah. How did you get involved in that in the first place?
There's a friend of mine when I finished up with it closed down because their Australian parent company decided they would legitimately, I'll need to be careful what I'm saying if it's going to tape here, legitimately take away a lot of money out of various funds that the other companies had. Back to Australia, so they closed them down. So when my friend heard that I was looking for something, he'd mentioned, look, there's a job going in, it's only 3 days a week, it'll maybe suit you until you get something else. So I made a few phone calls, got the application for them, went to the interview and got the job. And it's just been there, and I enjoyed it, and it was ideal because I'd started to reach the stage where I'm saying to myself, look, do I need this pressure in life, and do I need this and that? Because I've worked hard, and I'm doing this. Morning, mate, have a nice day.
Bye.
Bye. It's just my son going to work. Not a bad time to start, half 10. He works in the machines in the pubs and hotels,
right.
You know, the pool tables and gaming machines and that, so they can't get into pubs this time, you know.
Of course.
Yeah, so they're not putting her up any earlier. But anyway, because I'd worked hard earlier on in my life, I could be able to sort of step back a wee bit for the 5 days a week, you know, humdrum or 6 days a week and get bills to pay here and bills to pay there. I'm saying that very nicely. I'm not being ignorant when I say that. But, you know, because you work hard one way, you don't have the fun the other way.
Yeah.
And because you do that, and if you look after yourself and after your finances, then it's thing. So at the present moment, I'd like to get a job 3 or 4 days a week. You know, but I don't have any necessity, shall we say, to go and take the first job that's coming, so I need to pay my bills. Mm-hmm. You know, at the moment, I've got a wee bit of savings that I can use to pay my bills and just look for something that I'd like to do, something that I can enjoy doing.
Yeah.
But at 56 years of age, it's a young, you know, it's no time to retire, still a few years left in me yet.
Oh, wow.
But in the same respect, I'm not looking to work 7 o'clock in the morning to 7 o'clock at night, 5-6 days a week. You know, it's fortunate, thank God for that I don't have to get in that route, you know.
Can you tell me a bit more about the kind of things you've been doing with the group? Because my mum tells me a bit.
I started off with being a volunteers coordinator. So you had to go and look for volunteers that would get into people's homes or take them for a wee drive or take them for a walk in the summertime or that. So you had to select the people, meet them, go through a sort of screening process, pick out the ones that you felt would be suitable, to then draw up a training package, train them, put them through that, done the Disclosure Scotland.
Everybody's got to go through Disclosure now.
You know, match them up with the person, take them out to meet the people, let them see if you like them, they like you, and then arrange a time that suits. And then you just keep record of their visits, ask them to fill a form out after every visit, send their expenses in on a regular basis and pay their expenses.
So you were working more with the volunteers than with the Alzheimer's patients themselves?
Yeah, that was my initial remit. And then she's a service manager. She had an idea to group work with them, you know. So, well, she's very football orientated. Okay. You know, and I mean football orientated. So she thought about a football reminiscence group. And she asked me if I would take it, and I said, yeah, I would take it. It's just snowballed through there. And we got a bit in the Scotsman about it. And then we got a phone call from a woman down south in Northampton.
Okay.
It was a bit was put in the Physiotherapist Weekly or something, magazine for all the physios, and she was asking a few questions about it. And at the end of the question, she says, "And how long do they play in each half?" You know, and I says, "Well," I says, "considering we're talking about people in their 60s and their 70s and their 80s and that, you know, and quite a few of them are not mobile to walk a distance now, or mind play football." "Oh, I thought you played football as well." I says, "No, we don't play football." So that's where it's been. She's got a new job. She's leaving at the end of the week. And we don't know what's happening. The new manager's be put in place, and it's up to the new manager to decide what she's wanting to do. They'll need to advertise for a project worker as well. Because the manager runs a service in Irvine.
Okay.
And she won't be able to have the time to run the service. So she'll need to advertise for a project worker. And because they're looking for a project worker, they'll be looking for people with qualifications and SVQs and what do I know have? You know, so it's just the way the cookie crumbles.
Do they not count experience against that though? I mean, no.
Depends. It's like everything else in life. If it suits, it does. And if it doesn't, it doesn't.
But you've got experience on the ground with the people already.
This is the thing, but will that be taken into consideration? That a manager, you know, it's human nature. If you know somebody that would be good at a job, you can interview people and you can manipulate, and I'm saying that nicely, the interviews with the people for that person to get the job. You know, so if this new manager comes in and she knows somebody she wants to be put in place as a project worker, then that's what it'll be, you know. And again, because of the circumstances at the moment, I don't think I'm in the running for it, even if I did get an application for him, and even if I did get an interview, because I don't have the bits of paper, and everybody's all running scared in it. Don't have any qualifications, you know, if something happens, you're this, that, and the next thing, you know. If I get the opportunity, I'll definitely do it, but I'm definitely not holding my breath, you know. And that's just a fact of life, that's just the way the cookie crumbles.
One of the things I found, I attended a carers group for Alzheimer's with my mum, and it was just incredible for me to see what people were coping with in their everyday lives, because it opened up my eyes really quite.
It's huge.
Yeah, you've been organising things like pub quizzes for them, or quizzes.
We do quizzes at the lunch club.
How does that go? Because that struck me when I first heard of it. It's like a strange thing to be doing with Alzheimer's patients, with people with memory problems, doing quizzes with them. Do you find that works? Or?
Well, a certain person on your left hand side can either shake her head or nod up and down to say it works or not works. You know,
yeah.
It works because I just pitch the questions. Uh-huh. It's not a brainy level, shall we say. Uh-huh. I'm saying that nicely. Obviously, uh-huh. There's some fun in it. There's some uh-huh. joking in it.
Uh-huh.
But the majority of people, they can remember back. I don't ask what happened yesterday uh-huh. or last week. It was uh-huh. what happened uh-huh. 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Uh-huh. What was this? What's this capital? What's uh-huh. that? Uh-huh. All the different things. And if they want a wee help, instead of getting a point, they'll get half a point, but I'll give uh-huh. them some clues.
Uh-huh.
And some of them can be quite funny as well. Uh-huh.
But you choose your questions and, carefully, do you?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, you've got to. Uh-huh. You know, it's just... Uh-huh. Just go through the internet and pick out bits, pieces here, there, and just cobble things together. If I see something interesting in the newspaper, or I speak to somebody the other day, and I'll go, yeah, that's a good idea, I'll come back home and just type it into the sheet and uh-huh. use that at the next quiz.
Yeah.
You know, it's just all because I've been dealing with the general public, I think I've got a fair idea of what's needed and what's required.
Aye.
And without blowing my trumpet too much, it seems to have worked because I think the quizzes are good, and you know, some people are looking forward to it more than others.
Well, certainly my dad enjoys it.
There's a lady from Troon, she's the carer for her husband,
uh-huh.
you know. You're not having a quiz. This was at the last uh-huh. lunch club in December. I had arranged for a keyboard player to come in
uh-huh.
And just play some songs and have some dancing just to uh-huh. have a hangman. You're no quiz. That's no fair. I was looking forward to it. She's so much looking forward to these quizzes. Uh-huh. She's very competitive, you know. So what I do with is I always have a sheet with some tough questions.
Aye.
Because I know her and her husband are, you know, they're a wee bit educated better than me, so I make sure that I've got some tough questions in there, because aye. If they start, you know, that, and if they're running away with the quiz, then you just give their team a few tough questions,
right.
You know, to just bring them back again.
Aye.
Because always just, there's only usually a point or some 2 points at the end of the day, and that's what it's all about. It's having a bit of fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
But again, because you sort of realise just what's going to be, you've got aye. To be prepared for it.
Aye.
There's another family, they've been in a few times in the summer, especially when the school's on holiday, they bring their grandchildren with them,
uh-huh.
you know, and I personally didn't like that,
uh-huh.
because it's no for kids,
yeah.
you know, but they all need to, you know, so that was fair. So again, I was doing the same there, I was bringing in some tough questions, you know, because one of them, he thought he knew everything.
Aye.
Well, I'm not being disrespectful, but you had to put him in his place.
Aye.
You know, because it was this, that, and next thing, and you know, if they run away with the quiz, well, you know, it's not fair. Somebody's got to turn in and say, but how come, you know, they had their grandchildren with them, so they knew this, that, and next thing. So again, you've got to be prepared for what to do in that, you know.
Is a pub quiz is something you do yourself outside? Because just when you were saying today, you were preparing for Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
That's just for Christmas, because my son just got engaged the other week there. So he's future in-laws to be. Are coming down. So I just got that because her name, she wanted to play it.
All right.
So we had to do it. So I'm just trying to make sure I've seen some of the quizzes, be prepared.
Aye.
You've got to be prepared.
Aye.
But that's what it is. Aye. But I don't get, last night I was out, that's the first day I've been out for months and months and months, only for a couple of hours.
Uh-huh.
For a, you know, I just don't get and socialise.
Uh-huh.
I'm not used to it.
Aye.
Because when you're growing up, you're in a pub environment and you'd enough of that.
Aye.
B, I don't, I'd take a drink, but it's just a social drink. I don't, you know. And C, I grudge the money that you pay in pubs nowadays. Because there last night, it was for nearly £6, £5.50 or £5.60 for two gin and tonics. A couple of rings of drinks and you could be able to buy a bottle of gin and half a dozen bottles of tonic. You could have sit in your house for a week. Well, the way I drink, it could be a fortnight, having a couple of gins every night, you know.
Aye.
I just grudge it, you know.
Aye.
I'll go out occasionally, if somebody asks me, that's fine, but I just don't go out on a regular basis. I'd rather go to Aldi's or Lidl's or somewhere and buy a dozen bottles of cola or something and just sit in the house and get the same satisfaction.
So you got a big family celebration planned for Christmas then, with the engagement?
At the moment there's only 13 coming.
13.
Which is a wee bit disappointing. Usually there's a lot more than 13. You know, but again, people grow up and you know, other, you know, and relations of other things to do and that, you know. I'm supposed to get my sister over for Italy, but her husband has got some overtime that he didn't expect to get, and it's quite good overtime he's getting, so that's three that are not coming, they're just going to stay in Italy.
Okay, so she lives in Italy now?
She stays in Milan.
Ah, right, okay.
And a brother, he's over in Phoenix, Arizona, and my sister, she's in Milan.
Is that permanently in Phoenix?
Oh, he's been there for 30 years. He worked with Motorola. Well, I went to Zambia initially when he qualified as an accountant with Cooper's Lime brand, I think it was at that time. He was in Zambia for a couple of years, and he came back to Yeovil, and then he moved up to East Kilbride through Motorola. And at that time, they were looking for people to go to Phoenix.
Changing climate, anyway.
Well, that's it, and he's been there ever since. But it's just the way it goes. So we'll go there. I've been there the last few years for a couple of weeks.
Phoenix. I've never been there.
Again, it depends if you like. Well, obviously, it's desert. It's a it's a valley, you know. So you're guaranteed the heat. And again, there's no public transport, so you need a car. You go to a shopping mall because it's too hot to walk about outside.
It's a different kind of life.
Well, I wouldn't like it. So you brought up, you know, you've got to live in it, then that's fine. You know, but he's been there for 30 years, so he's used to the way of life, and his kids are used to the way of life as well, obviously. But I took my wife over. The first time I went over, and she said, don't like it. And the second time I went over, she says, don't like it. You know, and to me, it's great for a holiday. It gets you away, and you see something different. You know, I've been to Grand Canyon, I've been to Tombstone, I've been to Nogales. You know, you can see things, and that's why I like to see different things. But it wouldn't be my cup of tea to stay for you know, a home, shall we say.
I'm going to say, my sister lives in the States, but it's great visiting her, but I don't see myself up
for her. For some reason, it just never appealed to me.